It's time for the Horseshoes and Hand Grenades podcast with CNHI Sports Indiana's George Brimmer, your number one source for the latest Colts news, information, and discussion. It's time to kick things off.
Welcome to the Horseshoes and Hand Grenades podcast. I'm your producer, Heather B., and I'm here with your host, CNHI Sports Indiana Colts beat writer, George Brimmer. George, we are finally back. I know a lot of fans have been asking for the podcast to return, and after a year, we are finally able to get back on it. We've been a little busy.
It's been an eventful year, to be sure. And I understand where the fans are coming from. I think I missed the podcast a lot. It was a really fun season. I think we probably missed a chance to talk about a lot of really fun things. And now we're back and we're able to do that again.
All right. Well, so we're going to jump right into it with the NFL draft coming up on Thursday. And Chris Ballard has said recently that he has eight guys on the top of his draft board that he sees as that first round pick. You have made up your own list of guys that you think should be on it. And the first person on that list is Jeffrey Simmons, the defensive tackle from Mississippi State. Why do you think he's on the Colts board? And do you think he should be on the Colts board?
Yeah, well, it starts with the fact that they've done a lot of work on him in the offseason. We know that he was one of the guys that came in for the top 30 visits, came into the facility, had that private interview and the private workout. So I think that's why I think he's on the list. But, you know, the other side about it is this is the guy in this year's draft who's sort of similar to Jalen Smith a couple years ago, where if he was healthy, if he didn't have any injury issues going on, he tore his ACL in February, and he's likely almost certain to miss his entire rookie year. So if you draft him, you have to understand that he's going to redshirt for a year. That's part of the process. He's also got a character flag. He had an incident when he was in high school involving violence against a woman. I think that's something the Colts really are going to draw a hard line in the sand on. But he's a tough case. I think people need to realize, too, not all these things are black and white. And it's easy. It's possible to say we condemn violence against women in all forms and still draft a guy like this who, in 4 years at Mississippi State, has had no other public incidents, whose coaching staff really stands behind him, and who won an award while he was at Mississippi State for his performance on the field, in the classroom, and in the community. So he's a guy who seems like he's made up a lot of this ground. And, you know, do I know he's on the board? Do I know he's one of the eight guys on Chris Ballard's list? For sure, no. And that's why. You know, there's where the question comes. And if he's off the board, I think it's understandable and everyone will understand. I just don't know how comfortable they are. They're the ones that got to bring him in, sit in a room with him. I think our experience in the past year has taught us you need to know somebody. There's a lot more than what's in the headlines or what is publicly known. You know, you got to get in there and know the person. And I know that that's something that Chris Ballard has tasked all of his scouts to do with every prospect on the board. So if Jeffrey Simmons is on the board, and in this case, we'll just assume that he is, then he would be the best player available if he's there at 26. He's a guy who's been compared on the field to Ndamukong Suh. He's a guy that can come in and fill a big need for this team on the interior of the defensive line. Again, there's a big hurdle here. They have to be comfortable with where he is, who he is, why the incident happened. We don't know those answers. We'll find them out probably tomorrow night, Thursday night.
All right. The second guy you have on your list is a guy that I really liked when we were at the Combine. Rashawn Gary, defensive line from Michigan.
He's in a similar situation. He doesn't have the character flag, but he has a shoulder that people have some concerns about. It doesn't sound like it's going to keep him out of the season, but it does make people wonder, will he be able to be at his full potential? Will he be 100%? You know, all the things you worry about with anybody coming into the draft with an injury. He's hyper smart. He's a very well put together kid, I think, both physically, mentally. He does have high character. The question with him is consistency. His production in college at the University of Michigan did not match his traits. If you just looked at his measurables, his testing, here's a guy that should probably go in the top 10. But if you look at the tape from what he's put on the field as a Wolverine, it doesn't match up yet. And there's the question. I think the Colts would probably be in favor of looking into him. We know, again, this is a guy they've talked to, they've had contact with leading up to the draft. All these guys that are on this list, that was a prerequisite. I have some confirmation that they've been in contact with the Colts at somewhere in this process. And I think with him, here's a guy who could, he's got, first of all, he's got position flexibility. He can play on the outside. He can also move on the inside, be a three technique. And I know they love that, the ability to do that. But here's a guy who you would wonder, can defense coordinator Matt Eberflus get the best out of this guy? If his problems are consistency and consistent positive effort, that's something you would think Eberflus can work on. That's what he's been known for. It's what he showed us in his first year here in Indianapolis. So I think Rashawn Gary is a very interesting prospect because of that, and right there beneath Jeffrey Simmons as far as just on the field talent. And you know, that's why he's number two on the list.
At number three, I think you have a guy that might surprise some people just given his position, and is probably not in a lot of people's heads as the position that they would take in the first round. But we've heard Ballard say again and again, best guy on the board on our list. And that is a running back from Alabama, Josh Jacobs.
Yep, Josh Jacobs is universally seen as the number one running back in this class. He hasn't had a lot of production in college, but in his case, that's actually a positive because he doesn't have the wear and tear that most running backs have coming in. He split a lot of time, and I know it's hard to believe, but Alabama had a really deep backfield with a lot of talent. People probably floored by that. And so he spent a lot of time splitting, you know, having a very specific role, splitting time with Damian Harris and a couple other running backs who will be high in next year's draft class. And so I think, is it a position that is at the top of the needs list? No. But Marlon Mack does have some questions about his durability. He hasn't put together a full healthy season yet. And we know that Frank Reich, he said it publicly time and time again, he really likes that running back by committee approach. He likes being able to not just switch up who's getting the most carries within a game, but from week to week, use guys with different styles and build the game plan around a specific running back to be used more this week and less next week. It helps with what he wants to do offensively. It helps with keeping defenses off balance, making sure that they don't know what's coming. And I think if Josh Jacobs is the best guy on the board when they pick 26, then I don't think the Colts will hesitate to pull the trigger. Now, with both Gary and Jacobs, I think the big question is, will they even still be on the board at 26? These are guys that may go in the low teens, the upper 20s. We'll see.
Another guy I know a lot of people would love to get, but most people are convinced he is not going to be there when the Colts pick at 26, is Christian Wilkins, the defensive tackle from Clemson.
Yeah, this guy is a need. He fills that spot that's going to be vacated by Al Woods, who hasn't been re-signed, that nose tackle role. But he's athletic enough that he can do just about anything along the defensive line. Good against the run, terrific against the pass. One of the things that I read about him is that ideally in the way that he plays the game, he needs to be on an aggressive defensive front, pushing the pocket, getting upfield. That's what the Colts do. I think he's a fit for this team on the field about as well as you can be. And very importantly, in his case, he's a fit for this team off the field about as well as you can be. A leader, a captain, high marks across the board for his character. He's a smart kid. He told us at the combine that he's been reading a lot since school was out because he's obviously, you know, going through the draft process and he's not having classes and things that he's had for the past 4 years at Clemson. And so to keep his mind stimulated, he's just read books, you know, tried to pick up whatever topic he can. I think he and Andrew Luck would get along very well right from the start.
Buddies.
They would definitely be best friends. And so, yeah, Christian Wilkins, in a way, if you could build a Chris Ballard prospect from the ground up, he might be Christian Wilkins. But again, the likelihood of him being there at 26, not very high.
At number five on your list of your eight guys that you think the Colts might have on their top eight is another position I don't think a lot of people are thinking about when they think about improving the defense, and that's a safety, Jonathan Abram from Mississippi State.
Abram is not quite the perfect fit that Christian Wilkins is, but he's not that far off. He's another high character guy. He's another leader. He's another captain. And he is your in-the-box safety. He is Clayton Gathers. He will be that hybrid linebacker, you know, come in the dime packages, thumper type of defender. And I think it's something that Chris Ballard and Frank Reich both have mentioned. That's an element of this defense that they really like and that they really want to see and improve on. Gathers is back, but he's on a one-year deal, so you're not really sure, you know, how long he's going to be a part of the play-ins. I don't think it would be bad to hedge your bet with a guy like Jonathan Abram, another Mississippi State product. And he's a guy who, at his pro day, flat out told some of the media there, the Colts love me, and they've told me that. So there's definitely a connection there. There's definitely a fit scheme-wise. He seems like the kind of guy they want off the field. And one kind of funny thing that came out with him during the combine, he's the guy who his wife told him that he needs to play on the field like Bobby Boucher. That's his game. He's got to hit like Bobby Boucher. And so as long as he does that without drawing a flag, I think Colts fans would be behind that.
I think they would be all about that. The next guy on your list at number six here is a defensive tackle, Jerry Tillery, out of Notre Dame. The Colts did pretty well with a first-round pick out of Notre Dame last year.
Yeah, going to South Bend and picking up talent seemed to go well for him. I'm sure that's something a lot of fans will be behind, that they like that idea. Tillery is similar to Gary in the sense that his consistency is not where people want it to be. His effort hasn't always been there. He had some maturity issues at times in college. Of course, I think we all had some maturity issues at times in college. Nothing that that caused any legal issues, though. So it doesn't have any character flags, really. It's more, will you get that consistent high-level effort from him? And again, I think that's a problem that Matt Eberflus will solve for you. If a guy comes in to this locker room and doesn't think that he's going to play hard every down, Matt Eberflus will disabuse him of that thought very quickly.
At number seven on your list is a position in a school that might scare a bunch of Colts fans. We didn't have very good luck with that in the recent past with a pick, but that's a defensive end for Florida State, but this time it is Brian Burns.
Yeah, and this guy is super fast. He is honestly the opposite of Bjorn Werner in every way. First of all, he's American.
We love Bjorn Werner, though.
Who was,
as a person, he is a fantastic guy.
He was terrific, and the Germinator, you know, he was. But I think Bjorn honestly was one of those guys that draft day was the finish line for him. He won the race there, and he was always just kind of happy to be a Colt. I don't know that he was ever working to be great. You know, I think that that's the, and you never really know that for sure. With Brian Burns, there's not much thought about that. This is a guy, again, and you're going to see this a lot. He was a defensive captain at Florida State. He's very accountable. People at the combine were asking him point blank, media guys during his availability, what went wrong last year? Why did Florida State have such a bad year? And he said, it starts with me. I was a captain. I obviously didn't do something that I should have done. Now, his coaches disagree with him. They think that he was one of the few things that did go well for that team in Tallahassee a year ago. So, Burns, again, though, because of that speed, he's hyper fast. I cannot at all downplay that. And obviously, that's the number one trait the Colts are looking for on defense. It's also the number one trait almost everybody in the NFL is looking for on defense. So Burns is another guy that very likely will be off the board before 26. But if he's there, I think he'd be a kind of perfect complement to bring in and let grow behind Justin Houston for a year or two.
And the final guy you have on your list of eight guys you think that might be on the Colts top eight for their draft board is another player out of Florida. This time a safety from Florida, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah, and he's a little bit different than Abram. He does have some pop, and there is some thought that he can work into the slot and have that kind of versatility. He's a bigger, you know, taller, lankier, more athletic safety, more of a complement, I think, to Malik Hooker than are comparable to Malik Hooker than to Clayton Gathers. But again, they need, I think you're going to look for guys with ball skills. That's something that's very, very important to Chris Ballard. He wants takeaways. They really emphasize that in this defensive scheme. I think Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is a guy who can do that, can make that happen. And so again, he's somebody that they've been involved with throughout the process. And I look at the grades that some of these guys have from some other scouts out there, some of the publicly available scouting services. And amongst the guys that I know could go in that range and that I know have gone through this process, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, kind of the eighth highest ranked guy on that list. So to me, he might be the guy that fills out that eight. And then we'll find out again on Thursday night.
And then in addition to those eight, you have listed three more that you listed under iffy. That's a very technical football term, is iffy. But the first one of those
I got that from the five-year-old.
Our five-year-old likes to say he has an iffy mind, which, Yes, he does. I agree with him on that. So the first guy you've got on that list is Chris Lindstrom, an offensive guard out of Boston College.
The Colts absolutely love this guy. He may well be in the eight. It's one of the reasons why I have him down there. From what I understood, though, he's one of the highest rising guys in this draft. A lot of teams really like him. He's a very athletic guard, and I think that's what the draw is in Indianapolis. If you watch last year, they did so much with pulls and motion, getting those guards on the move, getting up into the next level. These are all things that Chris Lindstrom does very, very well, and I think that it's something that it's not hard at all to look at his profile and see why the Colts are as enamored with him as they are. Is he in that top eight? Maybe. And again, this goes back to, you know, is Jeffrey Simmons off the board? We don't know. You know, how, what answers did they get to that character question? Do they feel comfortable with him? Is Rashawn Gary's shoulder something that takes him off the board? That eight is very, very fluid. And I think Chris Lindstrom is a guy that very well could be in that group and fits this scheme very, very well.
All right. The next iffy guy is Darnell Savage, a safety from Maryland.
Yeah. Darnell Savage, I've seen a lot of people who compare him to Bob Sanders, and I think that should be enough for Colts fans right there. Unfortunately, the comparison is complete all the way through being undersized and playing a little recklessly, which of course led to Sanders dealing with injuries throughout his career. But we know, anybody who watched the Colts during the Peyton Manning era know what Bob Sanders brought to that defense, the way that team changed when Bob Sanders was on the field. So I think if there's even a chance that Darnell Savage can be a Bob Sanders type of impact, the Colts would be crazy not to be interested. The one thing I would note on that, Bob Sanders was picked in the second round of his draft. So if that is a complete comparison all the way through, maybe Darnell Savage is more of an option at 34. We'll see.
And the last iffy guy you've got is Jalen Ferguson, a defensive end out of Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, he's got maybe the most innocuous character flag out there. He got banned from the combine, and it was one of these times where the NFL sort of showing the no fun league that still hangs around for a little while. He got in a fight at a McDonald's in high school, and there were police involved. But it was more of your typical high school brawl. And to think that this is something that's going to be a flag for this kid is kind of ridiculous on a lot of levels. Much like Jeffrey Simmons, no trouble through college. His coaches speak highly of him. He's obviously in need position. They are going to take a pass rusher, I would think, somewhere in the first three rounds. Is that at 26? Is it at 34? Is it at 59 in round two? Is it in the early part of the third round? I don't know. Jalen Ferguson's name is going to be in that mix maybe for the first three picks. He very well could be 26. I'm not sure, though, that he, too, isn't a guy that's more in the play at 34. But of this whole group and of the nation, the most productive defensive end. I think he set the NCAA record for sacks. You know that's the kind of thing that's going to catch Chris Ballard's eye. So those three guys, I don't know if they're on the list or not. That's why they're iffy. They're all, and a couple of them, I'm not sure, are first rounders. They might be more in the second round range. So you always want to look at that, take that in consideration. But I think those are three more guys that you should keep an eye on as you watch Thursday and maybe even the start of Friday during the draft.
Are there any other guys that you saw during the combine or during the time after that you think would be a good fit for the Colts, or you just like them and would like to have them on the Colts? I know some of these guys, you go to the combine and you're like, oh, to have them in the locker room and to be able to go to them for a quote would be fantastic.
Yeah, there's always there's one guy, and he's a hometown guy, and I'm sure a lot of listeners who are from Indiana are already aware of him and probably have them on their list too. Terry McLaurin, the wide receiver from Ohio State. First and foremost, he's undefeated at Lucas Oil Stadium in his lifetime, and that's got to count for something, right? Mm-hmm. He won a couple state titles there with Cathedral. He won a couple Big Ten titles there with the Buckeyes. He's a receiver who runs routes well, who has high character, who's a leader. I mean, all these things that we hear again and again about the Colts. And, oh, by the way, he's from Indianapolis. He grew up watching Peyton Manning's teams. He would be very much, I think, to this community what Jack Doyle is, that same kind of presence in the locker room and in the city. And I know he wants to be a Colt. You know, he has not hid that fact. And I think that's part of this process, too. Chris Ballard wants guys who want to wear that horseshoe on the side of their helmet, and Terry McLaurin may have that desire more than anybody else in this draft.
Another guy that probably wouldn't mind wearing a horseshoe, given his love of horses. And when I go to the combine, my fun is taking the pictures and the videos. And so a lot of times I get to listen into a lot more guys than George does and just hear their silly stories. And one of my favorites at the combine was hands down was Ed Oliver from Houston. He was the guy that was talking about how his horse, Oreo, got him over any kind of fear because that horse just beat it out of him, basically. And he said, you know, having ridden that horse makes big offensive line guys no big deal to him. He doesn't care. So I loved that story. I thought it was a great story.
You're probably going to be out of luck there, though.
I know.
People say the Jets love Ed Oliver at three. We'll see. He's probably a top 10 guy.
Yeah, he probably is. One of the other guys I really liked was, and I always say his last name wrong, but it's O'Shane Zimenez.
Yep.
He is the first player that could be drafted out of Old Dominion. He was a great kid to just listen to and have a conversation with. He was very excited about this position that he has put himself in to perhaps be the first player drafted. And I thought he was a really, really nice kid.
And the Colts have a player out of Old Dominion on the roster. Zach Pascal, ODU, they've got a connection there. So, you know, they certainly can get enough intel on him if that's what they're trying to do.
And the last one I'll mention was a kid that if you heard his story, you're like, wow, nothing is going to faze this kid. That's Caleb McGarry out of Washington. His parents lost their house in a fire. They were basically homeless, living in a trailer for an extended period of time. The fire happened while he was at Washington. He found out from a neighbor who called him and asked him if he knew his house was on fire. And he said, what? And he's like, your house is on fire, dude. So that's how he found out. There was some NCAA craziness where they wanted to have a GoFundMe to help his parents get money to help repair their house. And the NCAA said, no, we can't help kids at all, you know? And then he also has a health condition that he says has made it really more appreciative of his experience. And when the Colts are, you know, talking about character, I don't think you can find anybody in this draft who has better character than this kid.
Nobody's overcome adversity the way Caleb McGarry has. And I think you have no question. I hear time and again when NFL folks are talking, when decision makers are talking, what's going to happen when times get tough? How does this kid deal with adversity? You don't have to question that with Caleb McGarry at all. Football is his escape. He made that very clear at the combine. This is a kid who's been through some circumstances in life that none of us would want to deal with and has come out the other side with a great perspective and a great attitude and stronger for it. He's an offensive tackle, too, and we know one thing about Chris Ballard. He loves offensive linemen, so I would not rule him out as a possibility.
Okay, was there anybody outside of the draft that you thought maybe would be heading here, you were excited about, would think would be a good fit? I already got mine. I am happy two seasons in a row. Last season for me, it was Eric Ebron. He came here, had a great season, proved me right. I was excited about that. This offseason, the Colts have picked up Devin Funchess. He is another kid that I have watched and been like, you know, that kid has the talent if he finds the right place, finds the right people to lead him. And I think he could have a Eric Ebron level year this year paired with Luck.
He doesn't have that Eric Ebron personality to the extent that Ebron does. I don't know that anybody on earth does.
That's not possible.
But he's a very charismatic kid too, and he's a very high energy guy. We saw that this week when he came and met the media for the first time. I think it's going to be interesting. It's a very good opportunity for Funchess, and I think he knows that. For me, the guy that's we know that he's come in and he's visited. There's still some talk, apparently. Nothing imminent there, but we'll see how the draft turns out and maybe see if anything comes of it. Is Jay Ajayi, former running back for the Eagles. I think his style is something that would fit this team. Obviously, he's got a history with Frank Reich. Won a Super Bowl with Frank Reich. And he's also, for me personally, he's from England. And so he's going to bring that accent into the locker room. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that if that's a possibility. But we'll see. I think Ajayi's, to me, the one thing they're missing and one reason why they're interested in Josh Jacobs, they don't have that between the tackles kind of thumper right now. They've got Marlon Mack's a home run hitter, and we all know that. You get him in space, and he goes, and he showed that again and again, especially in the second half of last year, what his potential is and how good he can be. But I don't know if they have that hammer. You know, since Frank Gore left, And I think that's something that Frank Reich wants as part of this offense. Again, we talk about this offense kind of being amoeba, changing from week to week, doing things to take advantage of what each particular opponent presents. And I think they would love to have that hammer kind of running back. They may well get him in the draft, and that will make it a moot point. If they don't, I would be interested to see if they'll revisit talks with Jay Ajayi.
You know, I've like always liked him too. I think he's a great running back, and I think he'd be a very good addition here. Okay, I think that wraps up draft talk for right now. I'm sure we'll have some when we get to the mailbag, and that's up next.
Delivering answers to all of your burning questions about the Colts and the NFL, it's the Pony Express.
Welcome to the Pony Express. That's the portion of the podcast where we answer your burning Colts questions. Our first question comes from a friend of the show, Jersey Johnny. George has been on his show many times. I'm sure you've heard him on the radio.
First ever Indianapolis radio guy to bring me on.
Yep. Johnny's a great guy. His question is about the running back position. Do you like the committee approach? Do you think Mac can stay healthy? And do they need a feature back?
Yeah, you know, we talked about this a little bit in the early part of the show, but I do like the feature. I like the committee approach in today's NFL because I think it's such a violent, difficult game. And you see with Marlon Mack, the toll that it takes on most guys. I mean, there's only so many Frank Gores in this world. There's probably one, and it's Frank Gore. And you just to stand up to that kind of beating week after week and come out and perform at that high of a level, it's hard for anybody in the league to do. And so I think if you have that committee approach, you can keep guys fresher, and then you can use them in ways that benefit them the most. And I think that's something we saw in year one with Frank Reich and Nick Sirianni. That's something they're really good at doing, finding what you do best and putting you in position to do it the most often. Well, the more running backs you got back there to cycle through, the better the odds you're going to be able to find that. So do they need a feature back? No. I think if they found one, if somebody came in their laps and they could go back into a time machine and get Frank Gore from 14 years ago, absolutely. You'd love to do that. You know, go the feature route and let it be. But I don't know that that's realistic in today's NFL. I think you need that committee. I think the Colts do a good job in using that committee. And I think one way or another, whether it's in the draft or in free agency afterward, they're going to add somebody to that committee.
All right. Frank M. Cook has a question. Says, assume we want DL, wide receiver, and DB in the first three picks. What are some possible combinations, and which one do you think provides the most overall value?
Yeah, I think it starts with the defensive line, because if you can get that interior guy, they brought Justin Houston in, so they've got that edge rusher that they need. And I think one of the underrated aspects of him coming in is Jabal Sheard now goes to the other side. And I think him not being the primary focus of defenders the way he was the first 2 years here is going to unlock him. I think he's going to have a big year too because Justin Houston's here. It's the middle of that line now that you need to beef up. Ideally, Christian Wilkins. If you could bring him in, I think if you could script 26 and 34 in a perfect kind of scenario, you bring Christian Wilkins in at 26 and just let it be. And then you would bring in 34. Jonathan Abram would still be there, and he would be your safety and add to that defensive back group. And then, I don't know, at 59, I would go there. It might be a little bit lower in the draft, but I mentioned him earlier. I would go with Terry McLaurin to fill out that wide receiver group, let him compete. He's also going to be a big guy on special teams, which is always important, especially with Frank Reich and Chris Ballard.
Okay, at VivaJones007 says, Ballard has commented on 12 to 15 premium guys at the top of the draft, then a plateau at guys 16 to 70. Do you think it's more likely Ballard could be aggressive to get one of those premium players, or to look to trade down to get another pick for a player in that 16 to 70 range?
I think it's more likely he'll trade down, partly because I think in any given draft, it's more likely he'll try to add picks than package picks together to go up, but also because I think that group of elite players is very, very small. From what I've heard, the consensus among scouts is there's about five really, truly elite guys. There's another level after that that might stretch to about 12 of guys that are difference makers, but maybe not at that elite group. And I think in Ballard's case, the only way he's going up is if one of those truly elite guys is available. The one circumstance, and it would be the one that I think you would love most, where I could see a trade up would be if a guy like Ed Oliver started to fall. He's one of those five elite guys in this draft by most counts, but he doesn't fit everybody's system. He's not for everybody. He's not the perfect flavor across the board. So if he started to slip into a range where, and I don't even know where that would be, probably have to be 12 to 15 at least, where the Colts might think they could do it, it would have to be something like that. Somebody sliding who has no business sliding. I don't see him trading up for anybody else. For one thing, he's got that group of eight, and I think as long as those guys are on the board and he feels comfortable one of them's getting a 26, he'll be more than happy to just sit there and let that happen.
At Osweiler MVP asks, any possibility of drafting a left tackle at 26 and letting Costanzo walk in 2020? I know we've talked about the first part of this because McGarry kept coming up.
Yeah, Caleb McGarry definitely comes up, and I don't think that it happens at 26. I think that possibly, but I don't think the draft breaks down that way. I don't know that there's a tackle out there right now who's likely to be there at 26 who would be able to surpass Anthony Costanzo in a year or two. But I do think that there is the potential to take a tackle somewhere in this draft who you see upside in, who can come in, be the swing tackle this year and maybe next year, and then, you know, compete to take that spot down the road. I will say this, the team likes Anthony Costanzo a lot more than Twitter generally does. He's a guy that Chris Ballard's a big fan of, Frank Reich's a big fan of, and you could tell last year there was a big difference when Anthony Costanzo was on the field and when he wasn't in the way this offense was able to operate. So they're in no hurry to get rid of Anthony Costanzo.
All right, our next question is from at Colts IU Boy. Do you think Ballard would trade back the number 26 for second and third rounder, presuming an early / mid 2 to 3 rounders?
Easy for you to say, right?
Right.
It's always possible, especially with the depth that he sees in this draft. And when he's talking about 12 to 70 being the same guy, obviously the more picks you can get in that range, the better. But I really think he, from the talks that we've had with him over the last few months, I really think he's comfortable that there's going to be a player at 26 that's going to provide value to this team. And I think he's more than prepared to stick there and do that. Again, if somebody blows him away, we'll see. And it'll be interesting to see if one of the quarterbacks starts to slide and somebody maybe wants to come back into the first round from the early second round. And they're offering, you know, some good incentive to do that. I could see him doing that. I would think, though, that it would be more in along the lines of a deal that would give him a second-round pick now and then maybe a first-rounder next year. I think that would be the thing that would really entice him.
Our last question of the Pony Express comes from at Crowded Mar. It says, we know the likelihood is low, but if the right players were there at the right spot, who do you think the Colts would consider trading up for?
Yeah, you know, again, we talked about that a little bit earlier about how low that is. Yeah, Ed Oliver obviously would be on that list. I don't think he's going to be there. I wonder, I really do. They have shown a lot of interest in Brian Burns through this whole process. They've been in touch with him just about every opportunity they've had. You know, every time players have been available to them, they've kind of checked in with Brian Burns. So I don't know. How far would he have to fall, you know, to make that a real possibility? I'm not sure, but he's a guy I think Ballard might be interested in going up for. And they like Chris Lindstrom an awful lot too. So, you know, would they trade up for him after taking a guard at 6 next year? I'm sure that would set up a really interesting conversation amongst the fan base. But it's a possibility. I think to me, the most likely guy would be Burns. But again, I think Ballard's much more likely to trade down and add picks than he is to trade up for anybody.
All right. Make sure you look each week for George's tweet asking for your questions for the mailbag. That is at GM Bremer. So, George, in wrapping up this week, we've got the draft on Thursday night. Who's your guts going number one?
Everybody keeps asking me that. Number one overall or number one to the Colts?
Number one overall.
Kyler Murray. Everything sounds like it's going to be Kyler Murray. Quite the interesting experiment the Cardinals are doing out there. It'll be certainly unique. I don't know that many teams have gone and hired a head coach who had a losing record in college and then gone after a quarterback who meets almost none of the traditional criteria. But we've seen people think outside the box and do very well with it recently. And I think it's more fun for the NFL that way. I mean, back when it was like, that's not going to happen because that's not what anybody does, that gets kind of dull. It's kind of fun to see people kind of pushing the limits and doing things that are unexpected. But I think Kyler Murray will be the first overall pick.
What do you think the Raiders are doing? Do the Raiders know what the Raiders are doing?
I know
we all knew that the combination out there of Mayock and Gruden was going to be insane, but I feel like we've even gone off the insane rails and now we're in territory that I don't know.
I'm going to make a prediction here, and I bet the Raiders are much more boring on Thursday than people think. I think that Mayock's going to sit there and understand that there's a little bit of chaos in front of him. I'm not sure that they're not kind of working in cahoots with the Jets right now with all the talks about quarterbacks and everything, because the Jets badly want somebody to trade up to 3 so that they can get out of that spot. And I think the Raiders would be fine with somebody coming up to take a quarterback there and giving them even another option. But I think if things go the way they're expected, which in this draft, saying that is insane. I don't know what expected means. But if it's Kyler Murray 1, and then it's Nick Bosa 2 to the 49ers, and 3 is Ed Oliver to the Jets, as people have talked about, I think that Mayock gets a big old smile on his face and throws in the card for Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle from Alabama, who might well be the best player in this draft. And I think that's what he's been planning all along. I think everything else is smoke screens and this time of year kind of nonsense. But we'll see. And the Raiders are definitely a wild card. They got 3 first round picks. If they wanted to, they could trade up to 1 and take Kyler Murray. So we'll see.
All right, that definitely should be interesting. And I guess the question on everybody's mind, like you said, everybody's been asking you, who are the Colts taking in that first round?
You know, my gut says Jonathan Abram, which means it won't be Jonathan Abram because it's never what my gut says. But I just feel like he's the guy who matches both fit on and off the field and also has the highest likelihood of being there to take. You know, that's kind of an important part of this process. I would probably be most excited from a professional standpoint if it was Christian Wilkins. I think he's a guy that would come in and do really good job in the locker room, but also be a difference maker on the field. And then I think, again, I cannot emphasize enough, I think they really like Brian Burns. And so, you know, I think if he's there, I think they may sprint to the podium about as fast as he does as the quarterback to put that card in. So we'll see. If I had to guess, I think Jonathan Abram is the most likely guy. But this, you know, it can't be emphasized enough. This is a highly volatile first round. Nobody's really quite sure what's going to happen. You've got some crazy players in there. What are the Raiders going to do, like you talked about? All these teams that are looking at quarterbacks, though, they could be moving all around the board. The Redskins, the Bengals, the Giants, the Dolphins. That's going to really shake up the first round. And the offensive line, people haven't talked about that as much, but the offensive line, there are some really elite tackles that are probably going to go early. And I've heard people saying there might be some maneuvering for them, some teams trading up to get them. All that's going to leave, I think, a situation similar to what we saw a couple years ago when Malik Hooker fell to the Colts. Nobody going into that draft thought Malik Hooker would be there at 15. Lo and behold, he was. Chris Ballard took about 10 seconds to turn the card in. That could happen again. I can't say who the player is, but that could very well happen again on Thursday night.
All right. George will be down at Colts headquarters Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. So make sure you're following him at GM Bremer on Twitter for all the updates and the inside information from the Colts facility. And we're done with our first podcast of the season. We hope to be back weekly or as news develops here while we're still technically in the off season.
Such as there is.
But it's great to be back. I think we both missed doing this. So we look forward to bringing more podcasts this year. George, anything to add before we go?
You know, nothing other than I think it's a really interesting setup for this season. We were talking about that earlier before we went on the air, that this could be a really special year for the Colts. And I think there's a real feeling of that. You've got continuity that's unique in this league. All the starting offensive lines back. I think 10 of the 11 starters on offense are back. The defense is going to have a little bit different look, but a lot of guys back and playing in the same role. Year two in this schemes with Nick Sirianni and Matt Eberflus. Year two for Frank Reich, who I think showed everybody that you were right. He should have been the head coach in his first year here. And I just think it's going to be an exciting year. I think it's going to be a real exciting year, again, to have a podcast and to share our opinions and the news with Colts fans. I think it's going to be a big year to be around this team.
You know, I wasn't going to bring up that I was on record as the first person in Colts media saying that Frank Reich was the right pick for the head coaching position. But thanks for going ahead and mentioning that. Anyway, so we are wrapping up Horseshoes and Hand Grenades for this week. Follow George on Twitter at GM Bremer. As always, you can find all his coverage of the Colts online at your local CNHI Sports Indiana newspaper or at haroldbolton.com. And as always, we leave you with the words of Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan, who have a new movie coming out very soon, by the way, and we're very excited about that. Be excellent to one another.
You've been listening to the Horseshoes and Hand Grenades podcast with CNHI Sports Indiana's George Bremer. For more Colts news and information, follow George on Twitter at GM Bremer. And join us next time for more of the Horseshoes and Hand Grenades podcast.